Welcome, and thanks for joining me today on Mortgage Manager Playbook, a podcast for sales leaders who want to improve their team's sales performance and originate more loans. I'm Pat Sherlock, your host. I'm excited about today's topic, new revenue growth opportunities in 2025. I have the perfect person, my great friend, Ralph Armenta. He is president of Lending in a Box. Prior to that, he was with ComputerShare and many other fintech companies. I've known him forever. He's one of the smartest fellows in mortgage banking, and I'm thrilled to talk to you today, Ralph.
Thank you, Pat. It's great to be here with you today.
Well, we're gonna talk about our important topic, but I want to chat about how you got into our business. That's always an interesting question. And then talk about the opportunities that you think that lenders aren't taking, trends and opportunities that lenders aren't taking advantage of that should be this year. And then we'll go into our main topic.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. So, you know, Pat, I've been in the business for 40 years. You know, I think I'm as close to wanting to pull the plug on retirement as I've ever been in my life. And, you know, most of my experience has been in the secondary and capital markets. I've been fintech side. And then, of course, as you mentioned, more recently, you know, I was SVP of enterprise sales at ComputerShare and had a great 4-year run there. And now I'm just tickled pink to be part of In-Center Lending Services as president of Lending in a Box. And a lot of people say, what is that? And what it is very germane to this discussion. It's about creating and bringing products to mortgage bankers of all different sizes that can develop and create what I would call either ancillary revenue or some opportunity around developing a whole business in certain segments that they normally or may not have thought about being in.
We'll get to that in a second, but I do want to talk about, especially since you're a capital markets person, and that's what I love having those chats with you because I relive my past too, about how you see the market and what trends do you see, and share a little bit about your thoughts on it.
Sure. So I think 2024 ended the way most people thought it was going to end, with the exception that I think that there was a very substantial and vibrant private label securities market across all of the various mortgage assets. So, for example, in 2024, there was approximately $156 billion in issuance that spread across $27 billion in prime jumbo, $45 billion in non-QM, and $16 billion in home equity space, which would take into account both HELOC and closed-end seconds. And then surprisingly, about $8 billion in rental securitization, and then another $7 to $8 billion in the residential transition lending space, which is referred to as RTL, or a lot of people would consider it fix and flip and bridge loan.
Okay. So how do you see 2025 from a capital market standpoint?
Yeah. So 2025, particularly in the private label space, I think is actually going to outdo 2024, predicated on no really major events occurring, right? Macroeconomic events. Now, this whole fire thing in California, a tragedy that it is, may have some impact, a negative impact in the beginning of this year, but it will actually probably turn into be a good growth year for both commercial and residential lending. It's anticipated that the size of the non-agency market will probably be between 170 and 185 billion. They're looking for 47 billion in non-QM, about 36 billion in jumbo, 21 billion in HELOC and closed-end seconds, and another 10 billion in the RTL space, which again considers both fix and flip and bridge loans. And then the third part of RTL, which I think really is going to take off, is ground up. And that is going back to our old days where there were builder forwards and things of that sort, which I haven't seen in a long, long time, but not the big public builders that we see, but really the smaller spec builders.
The spec builders, yeah. So you see this volume-wise is staying pretty much within the projections, or do you think the projections are way off?
I think the projections are generally in line. I mean, the increase between 2024 and 2025 is not overt. I mean, I think it's reasonable. It's another 10 or 15%. I think that mortgage bankers have become used to the non-QM space, and there's a ton of liquidity on the aggregator side. So I don't think it's unreasonable. And again, unless there's some major macroeconomic issue, it should be okay.
And so you see rates staying relatively where they are.
Oh, absolutely. I think that I don't see a refi market until probably this time next year.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it, that's for sure. I think lenders were very optimistic in the fall, thinking rates were going down, but that was obviously false hope. Do you think that they therefore have really aligned themselves from a profitability standpoint to address now? It looks like a market that's going to look like 24.
I don't think so. I mean, I might say I may be guardedly optimistic, but I don't think that we've seen the cardboard box stabilize. I think it's still pretty wobbly at the bottom of the box, and I could still see some mortgage bankers kind of fall out the bottom of the box.
Yeah, I think there will be some more consolidation. And interestingly enough, I'm talking to another one of my capital market friends, and he was talking about that he is seeing interest for new entrants coming into the business, which I think, but they're coming in a different model, not the same model that we have of self-sourcing. So it's more of a call center model. So we'll see how it all plays out. So talk about how you see the market environment, which you've already kind of shared. Where do you see the trend line with mortgage brokers versus mortgage bankers? Where do you see all of that looking like this year?
So you and I, for the last two or three years, as we at least catch up quarterly, I don't know whether we commiserate or whether we just absolutely are, you know, a little disturbed by what we see in the marketplace. But from my vantage point, I think you share in this, the broker to banker model is completely broken. It is not working anymore. It used to be 20 years ago, 15 years ago, mortgage brokers endeavored to be mortgage bankers. They endeavored to get warehouse lines. They endeavored to get agency approvals. They endeavored to think about owning servicing and hedging and going from a best efforts to mandatory pricing. I don't see that anymore. I see just the opposite. I see mortgage bankers and particularly successful LOs really driving themselves into the mortgage broker space. Right. I think, quite frankly, it is very much analogous with a financial advisor, an independent financial advisor type of model where I don't work for, I'll refer business to Charles Schwab, but I'm going to be the fiduciary and I'm going to send my mortgage loan to the best place on behalf of my client and myself. That's the way I see it.
Well, I don't disagree with you. And I actually was talking to a flat fee kind of, which there's a lot of these players in the third party space. And all of these companies are predicated on attracting the one unit loan officer. And it's like, Wait a minute here. I think they've already demonstrated that they're only one unit a month types. And so it just seems like the model has to get fixed for sure. So I agree with you completely. I also thought it was interesting, and I'm curious about your reaction to. I was talking to someone at Ingenious, and they were talking about that they did the analysis in 2024 and 300. In essence, 300 counties out of the 3,200 counties in the United States does all of the business. So there's only 300 counties. The rest of them, there's really, that's they're not really generating the volume. And so to staff nationwide is really not necessarily the strategy that used to be the strategy, but it's not a good strategy today because that's not
No,
where growth is.
I think that's right, but unfortunately, a lot of the state banking requirements require you to have brick and mortar, and so you're kind
Yeah.
of betwixt and
Yeah,
between.
true.
I need to have a branch, or I need to have an address there to be able to operate in the state. Put the county on the side for a second, just to be operate in the state.
Right.
And so I think to your earlier point about trying to develop other channel mechanisms, like call centers and things like that, are maybe a way around that, or help to augment not having a big staff or a big presence in a particular state.
Yeah. It'd be one thing if the folks that you have, if the employees that you have, the originators, if they actually were producing, but the nemesis within the business is that only 50% are actually doing 92% of the total business. So you have that other 50% that's not doing much. So let's talk about the product that I think was really interesting that I wanted you to expand upon is the RTL product that you were just mentioning. And talk about why you see growth in that area. What is the market? How could you fund that loan? And why lenders should do that loan?
Sure. So let me preface first by saying that I think like 4 years ago, when I was at Computershare, I saw the same type of thing occur in the second lien space. And I think I was very fortunate at Computershare to be at a servicer that was on the cutting edge of second lien servicing. And so we got all of the major folks out there that were originating and needing servicing. And so it really got me thinking as a person that sold servicing, hey, how do I differentiate myself, right? And I think as a salesperson, you're always trying to think about those things. And for me, coming from a conduit background and a capital markets background, the best way to do that is to bring something important to the table, and that's called liquidity, right? And so when you can create a liquidity for a particular product and have a demonstrable means to originate and allow that entity to sell that product forward, that is what I feel is a big differentiator. So we did really well on the second lien space. As I mentioned to you in the numbers earlier, the second lien world is going to be on fire again for
Sure.
2025. And so as I was thinking about that last summer, just really as I was walking from Memorial Day into June, I started to really get involved in the RTL space with a hedge fund that actually trades this product. And it really dawned on me that this product, while it's niche and it's always been around, and it is somewhat unique to, what they refer to as the hard money lending space, this is a product that actually fits into a mortgage banker's wheelhouse as well as any agency product or any conforming product that is out there today. Let me tell you why. Number one, the average loan size is roughly about 350 grand. So unlike second liens that started out at 100 to 125, this is a pretty good solid loan amount, right? The second thing is that these are all first mortgage loans. So mortgage bankers know first mortgage loans.
Right.
The third thing, which I think is important as you get into the economics, is that these loans, while they are business purpose loans, BPL, they command origination fees in somewhere between 300 and 500 basis points. So the rating agencies allow an originator that sells a loan to a securitizer to collect up to 500 basis points, right? The fourth thing that I think is important is that these are short duration loans, meaning that they really, you originate it, you close it, and then basically it pays off in a 12-month period. Now, I have found that two things from that. Number one, warehouse lenders are interested. I'm not sure I would use the term eager, but they're interested and willing to have a conversation for mortgage bankers for a carve out of warehouse line. So you can actually originate, close the loan in your name, and then sell forward an RTL, a fix and flip, or bridge loan. The fifth thing that I think is really important is that there is definitely what I refer to as the twofer effect, right? The twofer effect is I originate the bridge loan, it matures and pays off, and generally that borrower needs permanent financing that generally will come through a DSCR loan. So now a loan officer that's adept at originating this business is creating that financial advisory clientele by not only solving an immediate problem, I need money right away for a short term to fix and flip or a bridge loan, so on and so forth. But now I also have a permanent financing solution for you as well.
Right. So talk about that loan, because, you know, back in the day, a few years ago, that was the type of transaction that was all over HGTV. But the reality of it was you had to have high delinquency to generate the foreclosure, to generate the people that would come in and in essence need the warehouse line. And so, or the bridge loan. And so how do you see that playing out now? Even some of the ones that were the original, you know, people on TV aren't doing that anymore because it's obviously a much different market. It's all about buying low and selling high.
Well, it is. So the competition has increased substantially.
Right.
But the individuals that are out there that are that have developed that niche where they have, you know, created five or more flips. And by the way, the rating agencies actually think that any buyer out there that has done five or more fix and flips, they're really the safe bet because they know how to, you know, flip the mortgage and fix up the property. So competition has really increased, but what I'm still seeing is literally from several IMBs that I'm working with today, where we're actually trading loans for them, for these loans for them, they're originating somewhere between $3 and $10 million a month. Mind you, this is not a product line that takes over their conventional or normal business. This is an add-on that is generating somewhere between $5 and $10 million in additional originations. They're, let's just say, on average collecting 4 points. These loans will trade at yield to par, so there's no discount. And it's fairly lucrative, you know. And you can see by the number of public deals or deals that got done this year in the RTL space with Turak and Karavi and several others that are out there, they're good sized deals. And what's very interesting to me is forget about even the securitization side. The family office space, which where you hear about this private capital that's out there, right? And they're referred to as family offices. These family offices are actually one of the great propellants of liquidity for this paper. They like a 12-month or less duration. They like a 13% coupon. And they like the fact that it is real property that they can get their arms around. And if they need to foreclose, they can foreclose.
So talk about this issue of with the lenders that you're working with. You're obviously trading the assets. So do any of these people actually keep these loans because of the short duration?
It's a great question. So a couple of the IMBs that I'm working with today actually are indifferent to a certain extent about selling the loans. And I'll tell you why. They're collecting a 13% coupon. Their warehouse pricing is SOFR plus 400, let's say, or SOFR plus 350, whatever. And so they have a positive pickup of 300 basis points. They've made these types of loans to very, very close-knit people within the mortgage bank, meaning, you know, this LO knows this builder or this LO knows this, and they're pretty successful and things of that sort. So they don't, their secondary and capital markets people at these mortgage banks have not spent what I consider the right amount of time in looking for liquidity. That's a different conversation you and I can have at time. But what I think was really eye-opening for them was that there were individuals like myself that could come along and actually help them sell those loans to get additional, to bring to bear the liquidity and confidence that they could actually originate more.
Sure. Well, I have to have you come back and talk more about this because it's very interesting. But talk about, before we have to leave, what you call the four R's and what that all means. I thought it's kind of a clever thing, and I thought it'd be interesting for the audience to hear.
Thank you. Appreciate that. So the four R's are recapture, retention, rinse, and repeat. And as we talked about earlier, one fix and flip or one bridge loan actually is more than one loan in many cases, not in all cases, but in many cases, because that fix and flip loan actually becomes a candidate for a future DSCR loan. So again, you're taking that borrower from the fix and flip. They come to you at month 11 when there's a maturity of their fix and flip loan. And they go, okay, I finished the project. I don't want to flip it. I really want to own this thing. Yeah. What about some permanent financing? And so I think it's actually a great thing because now you've created a second solution. And what winds up happening is that that individual who may have been their first fix and flip, now they say, hey, I can come back to you because I can rinse and repeat. I can do this all over again. And you made it easy.
I have one last security question. So where are these loans? Are these pools that are 100% RTLs? Or are these pools that are 5% and then they're mixed in with other things? I mean, how are they being securitized?
Yeah, pretty much 100%.
It's 100%.
Flip, bridge loans. There could be... So the rating agencies define RTL, residential transition loans, into three different products, right? There is the ground up, which we talked about, which is the builder type of loan. I call it spec builder. There is the fix and flip, and then there's the bridge loan. Those three loans are reviewed and can be rated and put into a deal.
So from a historical standpoint, what's the track record look like? How are these loans performing? I have to put on my capital markets hat.
I think it's too new to rate, Pat. Even though they've been so the fix and flip world, the hard money world has been around for a long time.
Forever.
Most
yeah.
of it's been cottage driven by, you know, some, you know, entities out there that like to originate and hold that paper. I think the securities are too new to rate, right?
Okay.
I
mean, just curious.
It looks like they're performing really well, but you know, I think it's too new to rate.
Okay, cool. Well, I was just curious because that's always what it comes down to, because the market is now looking like a different type of market and what's a performance level. So anyway, anything else that you would like to share? Any takeaways that you would have for our listeners? Obviously, they can't do the same old things with the more difficult market. You have to look at these different type of products. There are definite niche opportunities out there. So the smart lenders are doing that. So share your takeaways for our listeners.
So I think the takeaway from all of this, it either from the top down or the bottom up, is that if you're a firm owner, you're an IMB, you're a firm owner, you have a retail presence, and you want to try to generate accretive top line revenue, I say this is a really good conversation to have. If you're an LO and you've been curious about the space, or you've gotten inquiries about how to do fix and flip, or if you could do fix and flip, and bridge loans, I think that it would really behoove that LO to kind of roll up their shirt sleeves and say, okay, where can I go take a loan like this, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm more than happy to, you know, have conversations about this with firm owners or LOs, mm-hmm. other secondary capital markets folks. And if I don't think I can do it, then I'll let that person know or refer on. But I really think that in 2025, you got to play much smarter. And I think the smart play right now is to really think about residential transition loans.
So Ralph, how can people get a hold of you?
It's pretty easy. It's ralph.armenta@incenterls.com. Or a lot of people will hit me up on LinkedIn. I do a lot of posting on LinkedIn, and we'll be posting a lot of information about the RTL space and what we're doing.
Well, I think it's a great opportunity for lenders. And I agree with you. You can't just do the same old stuff. You have to come back with really niche opportunities that really make sense. And this market is one of them. So I want to thank you, Ralph, for sharing your wisdom today. And I want to thank our listeners. Certainly subscribe to our podcast and share them with your friends. We'd love to have them join us. Thanks so much, Ralph.
Thank you, Pat. And look forward to seeing you soon. Take care.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Mortgage Manager Playbook. You can catch up on all our episodes by subscribing to receive each week a new show. Don't forget to share this podcast with your friends and team members. If you're looking to increase production, call me to discuss my prospecting sales training program, Ramping Up Realtor Referral Sources. Check out my website, www.patsherlock.com.